Well, this feels familiar, doesn't it? It's deja vu all over again, as Yogi Berra would say. Welcome to Phillies Therapy. My name is Paul Boyer, joined, as always, by The Athletic's Matt Gelb. Just like last year, 2022, when the Phillies and Braves did the same exact dance with the Phillies taking game one, losing game two, coming home for a swing game three. Shades of the 2011 NL Division Series, if you really want to torture yourself. But either way, the Phillies took one on the road. They got their road split, and that's all we really need to think about right now. We don't really need to think about the way game two ended. No, they got their split. It's 1-1, coming home. Citizens Bank Park is going to rock, even though it's a 5 o'clock Eastern start for reasons. We'll get into all of that in just a second. As I mentioned, I am joined by the inimitable, the formidable, the irreplaceable Matt Gelb. Matt, I don't know if you can tell by...
Hard disagree about that.
I don't know if you can tell by my Jerry Blavitt open here that I've got a little bit of nervous energy about this game, even though the matchup suggests that the Phillies should maybe have an edge in this one, probably have an edge, look to jump back ahead in this series. I don't know. We need to talk about games one and two first. So before we get into all that, how are you, Matt?
I'm good. And the first two games were tremendous baseball. And I think The reason why you're nervous is because you know that, as everybody else knows, that the Phillies have to win game three. I mean, it's not a must win in the mathematical sense. It's essentially a must win. You have a huge edge in this game. They don't probably have an edge. They have an edge. They have a huge edge in this game because the Braves do not have a good pitching plan. And they know it. The Phillies know it. This is a game that they have to win. You're back on your home turf. You win. And Strider's pitching game four. But if you win game three, you put the pressure on the Braves, even with Strider on the mound, because they can be eliminated if they don't win.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's what I keep leaning on. You would have liked to have seen the Phillies hold on in game two. They did not. The Braves took that game back as much as the Phillies let it go. Let's be clear about that. And now you're right. They have an advantage. They have Aaron Nola, the playoff Aaron Nola, you assume, going. You know, Ronald Acuna and Austin Riley have had their fair share of knocks against Nola, but he's held most of the rest of the lineup in check. He usually switches it into another gear here in the playoffs. He's at home. The fans are going to be crazy. The Braves have a very uncertain pitching plan ahead of them that, as of our recording right now, they haven't even announced, but we think we might know what's going to happen. What do we think they're going to do?
I think AJ Smith-Shawver is going to start. He's 20 years old, started the year at high A. He's only pitched twice in the major leagues since the end of June. The Phillies did not see him at all this year. Had a great year in the minor leagues, and they really pushed him. He would only be like a 2 or 3 inning pitcher. The most pitches he's thrown in the last like 3 months has been 60-ish. He really hasn't pitched at all for weeks. Big time risk. Like, I think the Braves, what they're looking at, Paul, my understanding is they're just going to lean into this, to the high variance plan here. It is a plan of extremes. It could go really great for them. It could go really, really bad. And I think in addition to Smith-Shawver, you're going to see this guy, and I don't know how to pronounce his name, so I apologize, but Daisbell Hernandez, who's a 27-year-old rookie who has not pitched in the majors since late July. He only had 4 games in the majors this year, has been hurt since. He's on their roster, throws hard, another right-hander. I think you're going to see him as well. I think the only way you see Bryce Elder, who we all kind of thought might start but weren't really sure, is if the Braves are losing and they need to soak up some innings. I don't think they like the matchup of Elder against the Phillies, and I think there's good reasons for that. I think if the Phillies see Elder in a close situation, they're happy. The Phillies are really happy about that notion, and that's why I think the Braves are, I think they're just leery about Elder today. So the Braves are leaning into the variance here. It's very possible they throw incredibly inexperienced and young pitchers into, what is a hostile environment for a visiting player. And that's why I think the Phillies have an edge, and it doesn't guarantee a win, of course, but it's an edge that I think is measurable, and it's a game they should win.
You, just on its face and just hearing all of that and reading that, if it were on a page, I would agree with you. I would think that you hear this uncertain pitching plan. It does, again, remind you of last year when the Braves played coy and then eventually said, yeah, we're going to throw Strider when he wasn't at 100%. And that's what we're going to go with. And of course, that ended up working in the Phillies' favor. But as somebody who watched, and I'm going to drop a name in just a second, as somebody who watched the Golden Years Phillies, the middle of their run, come up against just these unknown guys who would just randomly shut them down for reasons completely unknown, I'm always a little bit leery of the high variance guys, especially when the Braves do it, because they always seem to play the right high variance cards. There is a pitcher who pitched for the then Florida Marlins in 2010. He only ever made 5 appearances, and his first 2 were against the Phillies. His major league debut, the Phillies in the thick of the division race against the Braves. It was like a half game between them at this point. Early September, a guy named Adalberto Mendez comes in and throws 6 innings of 1-hit shutout ball. Now, I know that story ends up better and the Phillies go to the NLCS at the end of that season. Yes, okay. But that is a guy whose name I remember, 5 career appearances in all, for embodying that random high variance plan that can just come in and frustrate the hell out of you. Now, that doesn't make any rational sense.
No, I think you need some therapy. I think what I would say is that there's just such a difference between that in an early September and the postseason.
You're right.
And like high variance in the postseason typically doesn't work. Like it just doesn't work. And it's not to say that this plan for the Braves won't work. I mean, like, I think their idea is like, let's attack the Phillies with the unknown. And It's not a bad plan when your alternative is when you really don't have an alternative. You know, they don't really have an alternative. So I totally understand your trauma, and I'm not dismissing it, because for all we know, that could happen again tonight at Citizens Bank Park. I just think it's just such a different. It is just so different. It is so different. Just the energy and the pressure and the stress that will be on these inexperienced pitchers in a difficult environment. That is something that the Phillies must take advantage of.
Okay. That is totally legit. That is totally fair. I think if there is going to be a way where this thing goes sideways tonight here in Game 3 is if the Braves offense comes out hot following. If you believe in momentum and that it can survive a new starting pitcher, that it can survive an off day, that it can survive a change in venue. Maybe it can. Maybe you believe strongly that it does. Maybe the Braves offense comes out hot, and regardless of what the Phillies bats do against this inexperienced pitching lineup, the Braves keep swinging it. That would be a problem. That is the way I see this thing going sideways.
You feel like the first inning is going to be important tonight, right? It feels like it's going to be like, it's just going to rightfully or wrongly going to set a tone.
Well, here's the thing, right? The Phillies have done a very nice job in keeping Ronald Acuña in check. They've walked him twice and they hit him once. So
the best first inning scoring team maybe ever hasn't done anything in the first inning yet.
Right. So continuing to keep him in check is the key. You could tell that things were going to start going sideways as soon as on Albies' single in Game 2, the throw back in hit the lip of the infield, caught Turner by surprise, and Acuña, who, you know, for all his annoying to us personality tendencies, is a very heads up baseball player. He picked up on it immediately and he scored. And that was really that was all they needed to get the ball rolling, literally in this case. But you need to keep him off the base pass as best you can. You're not going to keep him hitless the whole series. You can't count on that. But you need to keep bringing him up with nobody on base. Leading off the game, he'll do that, obviously. You just don't want him to hit a home run there. But you need to keep having these favorable spots where if he's going to come up and maybe he's got the matchup in his favor, maybe he doesn't, you just don't want to leave him in these damaged situations. So getting out in front early, making sure you retire him to start the game will be really big. Keep the crowd into it. Look, I know the Phillies crowd, when we're there, we don't all sit down as soon as somebody reaches base in the first inning, right? Like, this isn't a crowd that shuts up immediately. Something really has to happen to get us to sit down. The noise is going to be there. They're going to be loud. but as much as you can, you need to keep that energy up. And it's really going to hinge on Nola to get through these guys, especially with two guys who have really handled him well over a large number of plate appearances at this point.
Yeah, Riley and Acuna. Mm-hmm. They've hit him really hard. The other thing I guess I would say to that point that you're making about the crowd is that, like, let's say the Phillies go down one run in the first inning or two runs. I mean, mm-hmm. this feels like a game where there could be runs on both sides. Yeah. And like a 2-run deficit in this game feels minuscule, in my opinion. So, I mean, that's how it has to be looked at, too. Right. The Phillies do get down early. Like, I don't think, you know, acting as if it's the end of the world is probably not the best way to go about business. But I know how everybody reacts, and that's fine. I get it.
It's tough. I mean, everything is amplified. And we see that in the playoffs, right? Like you can live with, you know, the Braves scoring two runs if it's a game in the middle of July and just be like, oh, okay, that's annoying, but whatever. In the playoffs, it does feel different because everything around protecting those leads is so different. But to get back to the original point and to leave, you know, games one and two a little bit further in our rear view here, I do think it is very important for the Phillies to win this game, you know, keep home field advantage, give themselves a chance to clinch at home. I don't think it's an emergency if they lose. And maybe that's foolhardy.
No, I think it is.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. And this is like going in opposition to my irrational thought about tonight, about game three, is that, I don't know, I don't feel terrible about game four. Either way, I want them to go in with the series lead. Of course I do. But I don't feel like you're pulling the ripcord on, you know, everything if that happens. Now, they're going to play it, you know, as if it's their last game, because it might be if they fall down. But I like the idea of facing Strider in Philadelphia. You have to think the Phillies didn't have a great showing against him in game one, but they did what they needed to do. You have to think at least somewhere in this guy's mind, and this is what I'm banking on as a fan, just again, more of the irrational stuff, that he's got a little bit of last year haunting him, just a little bit, even if it's a sliver, right?
What if it's motivating him instead of haunting him?
No, I'm not thinking about that. I'm thinking about the way it benefits my team. Leave that out of here. I
feel the same way you do about game four as I do game five. Like, I think if the Phillies win game three and lose game four, which you tip your cap because it's Strider.
Sure.
They will be underdogs, obviously, in game five. But Wheeler there, like, you feel you have a chance. Like, game five, I mean, you have more than a chance. Like, you have a good chance. You know, Fried, you expect him to be better. But I'll say this, like, I think the concern on Atlanta's side about Fried wasn't so much about game two and more about game five.
Yeah.
They were concerned about how the blister would hold up on regular rest, because he has not pitched on regular rest in a long time now. Mm-hmm. And that was the concern. Now, they came out of game two saying the blister was an issue, it was more rust, etc. He had no feel for his slider. He could not throw a slider. And two of the sliders he threw, one of them was in the first inning to Schwarber, who just missed an opposite field home run. Ugh. And the other one was to Real Muto, a slider that just absolutely did nothing. And that's what he threw, only a few sliders. And JT crushed it for a 2-run homer. And, you know, you have to assume you're going to see a better version of Fried, but that's not a layup. That's not guaranteed. And also, it's not guaranteed that Wheeler pitches as well as he did. Of course not. But
sure,
you feel like going into a game five on the road at the best team in baseball, you have a better chance than you probably should.
Yeah. I have a hard time disagreeing with that. I think what it all boils down to, either way, any way you look at it, whether you look at it my way, you look at it your way, you look at it in your own fantastical, creative way, however you might be viewing these next couple of games, the Phillies are not in a bad spot. Yes, game two hurt. We get that. It, you know,
all it took for the Braves to beat them in game two.
Right. Well, yeah, the Phillies played such a clean game in game one. You saw what a perfectly executed Phillies playoff game plan looks like in game one. In game two, they did not play a totally clean game. They still jumped out to an early lead. They handled Max Fried.
The offense got held down. Was lost in the first inning.
Yes.
I thought the game was, if you want to go back and you know, you're not saying it in the moment, but I don't know, in the moment I was kind of like, wow, like I'm looking at the bullpen. They've got guys going. The Braves do in the first inning. Freed's up to 30 pitches. The bases are loaded. And Stott, if Stott just gets a two-out single there and scores two runs, I think the game is over. Like, because the Braves probably would have had to go to a reliever there, or at least go to a reliever to begin the second inning. And all of a sudden, it is a very different game. And you can start padding your lead against their, you know, sort of their long or middle relief that you would be seeing. And whatever you want to discuss about the managerial choices, the pitch choices, the bullpen choices, whatever, like leaving 11 runners on base in the first seven innings is why the Phillies lost the game in game two, like mm-hmm. the end.
Yeah, no, it is, you know, and you can think, you know, Zach Wheeler was left in too long. And obviously with the gift of hindsight, he absolutely was. We know that. But like, in the moment,
I don't even agree. I don't even know if hindsight that I would agree with that.
Well, Darno hit the home run, so like literally,
no, it was a bad pitch. It was a mistake pitch. I mean, I don't know, but like,
I did not. I was okay with him being left in. I'm with you in that. I was okay with that. I was surprised by it because I guess yes, if anybody, Zach Wheeler is going to be the guy who stays in for an extra batter or two. It flew against what I have come to expect out of Rob Thompson and out of the coaching staff when it comes to pitching decisions. Maybe I need to have that permanently adjusted for Wheeler, but
the
hyper aggressiveness was what I was expecting there. And I was just surprised. Yes, it didn't work out in the end. And that's kind of like, you know, ex post facto kind of stuff, but it was more just a surprise than me yelling at my, you know, screen. Like, what are you doing, Topper? Like I was okay with it, all things considered.
I think this is how I would break it down, is that he had gotten Darno out on five pitches and two at-bats total. He struck him out on four pitches in the second inning, and he got him to fly out on the first pitch in the next time he batted in the fifth inning. He got him, he popped out, flew out on the first pitch. And to that point, Wheeler had given up two singles and a walk.
Mm-hmm.
And if Darno was the tying run there, Wheeler would not have faced him. As soon as the tying run was coming to the plate, I feel like Wheeler is out of the game there. Mm-hmm. And that is what happened. He gives up the home run to Darno, and now the tying run is at the plate because it's a one-run game, and he's out. And I don't know, like, there's been a lot of discussion about this. I was kind of surprised that this, like, came out as, like, the prevailing narrative, is that he was left in too long. I don't know, because, like, you know, people were really upset that he was pulled too soon last year, or that, you know, that they pulled Ranger too fast in game one. Like, I don't know. I mean, like, I just, to me, Wheeler is the one guy who does deserve the benefit of the doubt. And it's not just because of who he is. And it's also because of the way he was pitching. And even if you thought he lost a little bit, which maybe he did in the seventh, remember the sixth inning, that run scores, it's an unearned run. I mean, like, he literally gave up a walk and a single
right
in that inning and gave up a run. The other guys, he got out on two pitches, one pitch, and then a four pitch strikeout. And like, I don't know, like, I think he should have kept pitching.
Yeah. And look, that's why I said, I agree with you that way. I thought it was okay. You know, Matt Olson leads off the seventh and he hits the ball hard. It is a single. He hits the ball. Matt Olson just hits the ball. He hits the ball hard. He's a good hitter.
It was a single.
Bullies, guys. It was a single, but then he comes right back and gets Ozuna, and it's right. The bottom of the order, yes. Right? It's not like Olson's batting second in this variation of the lineup and you're facing, you know, Riley or whatever. Like, you've cleared Olson. You have favorable matchups, even with, you know, Eddie Rosario in the mix before Pilar pinch hit for him. You figure that Zach Wheeler probably can still make that work, especially the way he looks rebounding to get Ozuna. He hung one. And
it was a bad pitch.
You know, the Phillies made two mistake pitches in the last two innings of the game. And
two
they
mistake
were
pitches in two games, basically.
Right. And like, that's what the Braves do. Like, if you are not on the very top of your game, there's a good chance that they will hurt you for it. And they did. I mean, and to continue on giving the Braves a little bit of credit, which, again, we do need to do here. The Phillies did not, you know, blow this in a vacuum. They did not do this all themselves. Jeff Hoffman, how good has he been against right-handed hitters this year? What was the number? Righties were slugging like 220 against him or something.
Something like that, yeah.
And, you know, he gets Riley in a full count and hangs one that Riley has to hit one-handed that clears the fence. And you know what?
It wasn't a good pitch.
You know, it wasn't a good pitch.
No, it was not a good pitch.
But
hey, he had a base open, and like it was just everything about it was a bad pitch, I thought. Like, you know, to me, if you really want it, yeah. I wrote about it, and like I thought the situation called for fastball. And even though now I know that Riley said afterward he was looking for fastball, honestly, it didn't matter. Like, he has not been able to hit a fastball, a high velocity fastball, in this series yet. And that was their plan against him. And earlier in the at bat, you know, he took a really good fastball that was just a little up, good take, swung through a 98, you know, kind of elevated. And Real Muto tried to come back 2-2 with a fastball, same thing, and Hoffman yanked it, and that kind of spooked JT. Mm-hmm. And so that's why he called for the slider. And I get it, slider's been Hoffman's best pitch, but it's got to be out of the zone, get down and away. It just was it was a really bad pitch. I think it was a bad pitch call, honestly. I think it was.
Yeah, even with Olsen up next, you figure,
yeah, Soto's coming in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Soto's coming in for Olsen. Yeah.
So, you know, it happened, man. The Braves have good hitters, and sometimes they pounce on you if you make a mistake. Jeff Hoffman, for as good as he's been, is in the midst of a career year, what is hopefully not a fluke, but he's not exactly riding on years and years of experience at this point where you can say that was just a completely unbelievable thing. Like, and it happens.
I do think it'll be interesting to see if a similar situation comes up, whether it's Hoffman or Kirkering in game three.
I think with it being at home, that does make it more of an interesting thing. I like that Hoffman was the play in the eighth for obvious reasons. Like, you don't want to lean on the rookie too much, as impressive as he's been in his, you know, single handful of career appearances. You know, Hoffman's the play there over Kirkering for sure. But I do think we're getting a little closer to equilibrium the more Kirkering comes in and throws up zeros. Not that I don't have wavering confidence in Jeff Hoffman. I still feel like what he's riding right now is career best stuff, and we should feel fine if he has to come in to protect a lead again tonight. Right. But Kirkering is definitely, he's rising up the ranks quickly. It's just a couple of games, but I think we can all see that the stuff will play and can get hitters of this caliber out. So I wouldn't be surprised.
One more thing about game three, and you mentioned Acuna and Riley's numbers against Nola. I do think it's interesting that this year in particular, Acuna against Nola was 2-for-10 with one strikeout and just one extra base hit. A lot of the numbers are padded from earlier seasons, like in 2018, well, mostly 2019. 2019, one of Nola's,
that was the follow up to Nola's best year.
Right. 2019, Acuna hit him really hard. He walked six times, hit two homers. Yeah. But, this year was Nola had a good plan against him.
Well, you got to hope that keeps up. Like,
Riley crushed him this year. I mean, Riley had two home runs off of him. Riley, out of all those guys, like, honestly, like, I think Riley is the one that scares me the most, because his at bats, like, he rarely swings at pitches out of the zone, and he's so good at fouling balls off. Like, he's just he's so tough to get out.
He absolutely is. You know, for as much as Acuna can hurt you once he gets on base, and he can get on base a number of different ways, Riley at the plate, man,
he's like, just nails.
He won't hurt you with the legs, he won't need to run too hard when that ball's going over the fence. All right, enough complimenting the Braves. I think the Phillies are still in a good spot.
I don't disagree with you. I mean, they have I think it's a huge edge in game three. Like, I think this edge is huge. The Braves do not have a coherent pitching plan. They really don't. I mean, like, they're gonna try different things, but like, they don't. The reality is they do not have a coherent pitching plan for this game, and you know, it's because of injury and because of ineffectiveness from a guy who was an all-star. Bryce Elder was an all-star, and his final few months were not good. This is a game the Phillies have to win at home with that pitching advantage. To me, it's a good spot to be in, despite what happened in game two.
Really? And I mean, and that wasn't a question mark, really. That was an exclamation mark.
Really?
Yeah, no, really. It's I know that can sometimes be a little hard to tell with the way I say these things. There's so much opportunity in front of this team right now to rebound from what happened in game two. Let's not look back on it and think of like, oh, this is their chance where they could have swept, because that's over. The series is tied at one, and it's a best of three right now. The Phillies have the opportunity in front of them to retake control of this series, and they need to take advantage of it. Like, how many times over the last couple of months did we see acts of baseball heroism wasted, you know, with the big hits that Harper and sometimes Turner had in games that, you know, either the bullpen let slip or just something got away from them. You know, Harper's 300th home run comes immediately to mind. They did not let that happen in game one, right? There was heroic defense on Turner's part in the good way that time. And the pitching staff all bound together. They wasted it in game two. You could call Zach's outing something of a heroic effort. He only had those couple of hits. He was looking great into the seventh. And then the rest of it eventually got away. So, like, you can say that they didn't take advantage of it there. They need to turn it back to the way they were executing against the Marlins and the way they executed in game one. Take advantage of the advantages that are provided to you. And don't let up. Don't be content with four runs. Don't be content with five runs.
I think it's easier for them to not let up at home, right?
Sure. I would hope so. Yeah. I would think so.
Just like, you know, naturally. Like, yeah.
This is something that the Phillies have done, different configurations of players the last couple of years. When they get an early lead, sometimes the offense peters out later in the game. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, and this was more prevalent in 21 and 22, I think, than this year. But when they jump out to early leads, they're leading after the fourth inning, something like that. The offense kind of goes to sleep. And I want to avoid seeing visions of that again. I don't want that coming back into the mix. They didn't pounce on the opportunities they had in game two to pad their lead. They let the Braves hang around. They let the Braves stay in it. That's how the Marlins won games all during the year, but they just kind of snuck through and like blooped their way in. The Braves, that's one of their tools in their bag. They can bludgeon you, they can outpitch you, and they can also sneak back in if you let them hang around. They do it all. And you cannot let your guard down again in game three.
Do you want to hear the most sickening take I have?
Oh, boy. You know what? Yeah, sure. Let's go for it. Why not? Let's hear it.
A sweep would have felt too cheap. A sweep would have opened the door to the Braves and everyone in baseball being like, the playoff format, this is why the Braves lost. No, like now it's a series. The Braves got their big win, and if the Phillies win this series, there aren't any excuses that you can reasonably offer and say this is why the Phillies beat the Braves. It should be no, it's because the Phillies were better.
Man, I'm sad that this isn't a video thing that we're doing here, because I'm sitting here with my head in my hand.
They should have won game two. It was a terrible loss. It was a terrible loss. The Phillies should have won that game. And to me, it all comes back to the 11 men they left on base, because they really let the Braves off the hook early in that game. But if they would have swept the Braves, would the conversation have been? What would the conversation have been?
Matt,
from the Braves side and from nationally, what would the conversation have been?
Right. And that's all right. So I'm wearing my National Observer hat to meet you on your level here and say, yeah,
I'm not talking
okay.
about the conversation in Philadelphia. I'm talking about the conversation nationally and in Atlanta. In Atlanta, yes. It would have been, why don't they reseed? Why did they get such a layoff? Why is the playoff format like this, et cetera?
You know what, man? That's their problem.
I'm not saying it's a real thing. I'm just telling you that's what the conversation would have been had the Phillies swept them.
Okay. Okay. I'd be sleeping fine, man. I do hear you, and it's interesting to just kind of say that. And I know people, you know, 9 out of 10 people you say that to would be like, "The hell are you talking about? What the hell are you on?" Yes, I do think it would have caused a lot of people to say some very emotional things. We would have seen something on the level of 49ers fans and players in the wake of that conference championship going absolutely crazy. It is something about the way Philadelphia teams are playing some of these other teams in other sports lately that just causes brains to break. And I think if the Phillies had gone up 2-0 and maybe pulled off a sweep in a parallel universe, that absolutely would have happened again. Look, a lot of Braves fans are very self-serious, and you can see that, you know, you can see that embodied in the way the person who runs their mascot account decided to tweet about game one. Like, they just, they're not having fun with anything. I don't think they're having fun. I do not think they are having fun with this.
Is there going to be a creative fanatic skit sometime during game three involving like a blooper effigy?
Honestly, I don't think
you feel like it's going to happen, right?
I don't, No, actually I don't, but I don't think it's a zero. I think it's like 40-60 against. But anyway, like the Braves fans aren't enjoying this. The crowds were quiet for a full game and a half.
I'll say, yeah. I mean, they're the very nervous. End was exciting. Yeah, but the crowd, yeah. I mean, I was...
They're not.
It was underwhelming. It was underwhelming. I mean, and obviously nothing is like what it's like here, but it was, yeah, being there and being in that, it was, yeah, it was underwhelming.
Right. And so if the Phillies had swept them, that they would have just been, it wouldn't have been fun. They would not have made it fun. There is no self-deprecation coming out of it.
And I feel like Phillies fan base needs some of that, right?
We do. That is our coping mechanism. We self-deprecate. We are allowed to make fun of ourselves. We are allowed to denigrate ourselves. Heaven forbid somebody from the outside tries to do that. You are not allowed to do that. But we do that when things go sideways. You need to give us a second to recover, but then we do it, right? We have our ways of recovering from things like this. We have our ways of moving on. We have the emotional armor built up from years and years and years of watching terrible baseball sandwiched around the golden years of 07 through 11. Like, we know how to deal with this. For whatever reason, I guess because they've been too successful since the 1990s, the Braves fans aren't like that. And it makes it hard to like interact with them ever. I hope that changes. And I don't think any Braves fans will really listen to this. And I don't really care. Welcome. If you do, you're probably one of the good ones. I hope you find a way to enjoy some of this. You know, you'll probably say that if you go on to win the World Series, and that's fine. Like that is enjoyable. Anybody can enjoy that. But right now the Braves fans just seem uptight, you know, and maybe we spare them the agony of having to go through a game five. And hopefully we spare the rest of the national audience the chop again. I would like to,
I feel like, hate to tell you this, just an impossible feeling to avoid. I feel like this series is going five.
You know, and for national audience, it should. I feel like people out there deserve some kind of a classic. It's been sort of a dud in the wild card and division series for, you know, non-participants so far.
This series feels like the series is going five, and it's the Phillies with their best pitcher in their place against the best lineup in baseball. And if it goes five, it could be a classic.
Yeah, well, it certainly would. I will sprout many gray hairs in the process, but it would be hard to deny that it would reach classic status if we get to a game five. Okay.
What have you thought about the rest of the playoffs? And I would say that what a shame that the Orioles lost. You know what they mentioned this during the game? They showed Mike Elias.
They did.
What a team he built. They mentioned Joe Davis, who does such a great job. And yes, I watched baseball last night, even though the Phillies weren't playing, because that's what I do. I put the kids to sleep and I watch some more baseball because I'm weird.
That's what we do.
They mentioned, they show Mike Elias later in the game, and he says, Mike Elias, who hasn't signed anyone to a multi-year deal since he's become GM. Yep. And I'm like, wait, hold on. I'm sorry, what? And then I looked this up. The last time the Orioles signed a player, a free agent, to a multi-year contract was Alex Cobb in March 2018. That is crazy. what happened in the series? The pitchers they acquired at the deadline, the reliever from Oakland wasn't even on the roster, Fujinami.
Yep.
And Jack Flaherty pitched mop up. Like, they deserved this. So congrats to the Rangers for spending and trying and going for it. And they are four wins away from going to the World Series.
Yeah. I mean, like, congratulations on your System of the Year awards and everything.
Yeah, and they'll be very good next year again. And they're going to be good for a while. But I think the Orioles, if they're to be taken seriously, like need to spend or trade some of the prospects, like go for it, you know, and they got what they deserve. And sorry, this is very anti-Orioles bias. And I apologize to any Phillies fans who are also Orioles fans, because I do know there are some people who are
some.
I know. Yeah. Especially once you get closer to the Maryland border. But yeah, I don't know. I just something about everything about the way they went about it bothered me. And I think they absolutely got what they deserve.
Well, and that should make us all the more grateful for the way Dave Dombrowski has gone about building this team, right? Like, don't, and I guess in fairness to Matt Klentak with a couple of his moves prior to DD coming on, the Phillies are spending money. And oh, by the way, they're in the playoffs again for the second straight year with the chance to go to the NLCS again for the second straight year for the opportunity to again go to the World Series because they've spent money to bring in good players.
Yeah. Then one thing to note about, we're talking about the rest of the playoffs. One thing to note for Phillies fans specifically is that if Arizona does sweep the Dodgers tonight in game three, that means the Phillies Braves game four will be at 8:07, not 6:07. If it's the only game on Thursday.
That is a good programming note, as we will not be recording again prior to game four. And it also means that if the D-backs win that series, that should the Phillies advance, they will have home field advantage in the Crazy. NLCS. So got to get there, but hello. That would be cool. It would be the first time they had home field advantage in a series since 2011, right? I guess if we're not counting the wild card.
We have to count the wild card.
All right, fine. Anyway, game three is tonight. It's 5:00 Eastern. Weird start time. But it gets it out of the way early, I guess, if you're one of those who's sort of dreading it. I don't know. I don't know how you watch these games. I kind of go back and forth. In truth be told.
How do you watch? I'm curious.
Yeah.
How have you been watching these games?
I watched the first two games totally on mute.
What?
Yes. I did not listen to the broadcast. I was playing music, so it wasn't in complete silence. I was actually listening to a band called Everything Everything. Not that that has anything to do with superstition. I do not like listening to the chop at all. Like it bothers me. So I just mute it. So I don't even bother with it. And I just sort of watch how the game goes without an announcer feed. It's nothing against Brian Anderson, who I think is one of the better national announcers out there. Nothing against Jeff Francoeur, who, even though he is a Braves color announcer and a former Phillies great.
Frenchies,
I think he's
Frenchies
also
terrific.
Yeah. I also
French,
think he's
French,
very good.
French Tober. It's French.
Yeah. Tober. Right. They're both fine. It's nothing against, in this case, strangely, because I do have a long running feud against national baseball broadcasts. It is nothing against this particular crew and the way they are putting things together. Watching Braves games in Atlanta just doesn't make me feel comfy. And so I like muting it because I can do that. I can mute it and I'm fine with that. It makes me feel better.
Spencer, I feel like I've Strider learned a lot not, about you in the last minute.
Spencer Strider will not be able to mute the crowd tomorrow when he takes the mound. So make sure he hears you.
This is best Larry David. I know everybody's. I'm sure that's going to get played a million times tomorrow everywhere.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. But it was. He was not being serious, if anyone was curious.
It doesn't matter. We're going to pounce on that.
No, I know. Yeah, of course. Interesting. So will you watch game three on mute too? Or
no.
How will you do that? Okay. No.
No. Right. No, that's not going to be.
Yeah.
No.
I like what they did. Like they're trying to get everyone involved on the Phillies radio broadcast, you know, cause there's no TV, right? No local TV.
Right.
So Tom McCarthy's been doing the middle innings, like maybe 4, 5, and 6, but then in the later innings, they've had Fransky paired with both Larry Anderson and Kevin Stocker. And I think it's worked really well. I don't know if anyone who's listening is listening to radio broadcasts. I know people like to try to sync up the radio broadcast with the TV feed during the playoffs just because of that disdain for national announcers. But the three-man booth and the radio, I thought it was really good. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, no, they're doing a nice job keeping everybody involved. You know, the Phillies have that luxury, I think, of having a number of really, really good broadcasters. I'm not really sure how much longer Tom McCarthy is going to be doing this because his national profile seems to be, you know, climbing. But that's a discussion for another day. I don't know. I think just for the moment, for a guy who had to fill in for, you know, a literal legend in Harry Callis, that Tom McCarthy has acquitted himself quite nicely over the last 15 years. And that's to say nothing, of course, of Scott Fransky and Larry Anderson and Kevin Stocker and the rotating, you know, group of analysts that have hit the radio over the last few years.
Can we end with one thing?
Of course.
Give me a very specific game three prediction.
A very specific.
It doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be about the final score or who wins. Just give me a very specific game three prediction that we can revisit.
I think the game will ultimately be decided on a ball that's not put in play. Whether that means a bases loaded walk, whether that means hopefully another catcher's interference on Sean Murphy, whether that means. whether that means fan interference, I don't know. I hope it better not be fan interference. You all better be on your best behavior. I feel like a ball that is not in play will decide this game. How about you? What do you have a specific thought or anything coming to you in your Magic 8 ball?
I think Brandon Marsh hits a home run tonight.
Beautiful. I'll take that. I'll take that 11 times out of 10. Thank you very much. And that's much more pleasantly specific than mine is. I don't really know where that comes from. It just felt like a thing. I don't know. We'll see. I can usually read the tea leaves better in the moment. Like I could feel game two slipping away before the Braves really even mounted their rally. Like I've seen that game before in the regular season.
Yeah. I think the winner tonight needs at least 5 runs. Also.
I think there's going to be
runs in this game.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Now that said, it may not be till later. It's a different time of year and it's a weird start time. The shadows might be a factor early in the game, although I'm not sure because it is October 11th and the sun does set earlier, obviously. If it's earlier in the year, 5:07, it's tough shadows. I don't know what it'll look like this afternoon, evening, but it might be a factor early in the game.
It might be. Yeah. So the sun sets over past left field in Citizens Bank Park when it goes down. It won't be a problem for outfielders, which is nice, but yeah, it could do some weird things with the scoreboard and, you know, that little cutout between the scoreboard and the high left field stands down the foul line. You know, maybe something creeps in there. Maybe it hits the light towers. I'm not really sure. That part of my amateur meteorology is like, there's a gap in there. But you're right. No, it's something to consider because games do not start at 5 o'clock out here.
No, it's weird.
So it'll be something to keep an eye on. Okay, great. So I think that's enough nervous energy out of me for this morning. The Phillies have a game to play. They have 2 games to win, and they still have a tough task in front of them. But you still have to feel about as good as you can, even with the way game 2 ended. The Phillies have matchups in their favor. They have the matchups in game 3 in their favor. And if it gets there, a game 5 also kind of looks in their favor. Maybe a little bit less so than tonight, but things still look okay.
They'd be dogs, but yeah.
Just hang in there, everybody. I will do my best to hang in there. It's tough. I don't like watching Braves games, but I have to. Because, well, you know why. Yeah, fine. That's it. It's over. Thank you for listening to Phillies Therapy. My name is Paul Boyer. Thanks, as always, to Matt. Go read his stuff on theathletic.com. Enjoy the game tonight as much as you can. Hopefully the Phillies pull it out. We will be back with you if there is a game 5, probably before game 5.
Yeah.
And if not, well, we'll figure it out as this series progresses. We'll see how things go. So hang in there. 5 o'clock start. Aaron Nola on the bump. Phillies have a chance to retake the series lead and hopefully wrap things up before this thing ever goes back to Atlanta. Thanks again for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon.